This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamotu, MPR. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us
Helen Chong,
Barbara Arnold,
Audrey Jarvis,
and I'm Stuart Burks. Now, thank you very much, the three of you, for coming along. And the reason that we're here as a group is that you have all been involved with the National Council of Women.
Yes.
So how long have you been involved with that?
Well, I became what was then an associate in 1978 and remained an associate, which is somebody who represents themselves with individual views, until about 1989 when nationally they decided to have individual members, and I became an individual member and a delegate for various organisations over the years, and I've been involved ever since.
I became an associate member in the mid-1980s when my youngest child was still at preschool, and I was an associate until I started teaching, and I became the delegate in 1995, I think it was, Helen, as the representative for Post-Primary Teachers Organisation Association.
Replacing
Helen.
And I became a delegate when I joined in, it would have been about 1990, and I represented Methodist Women, not Methodist Women National, but Methodist Women at the church I belonged to, in which would have been Trinity Methodist Church then, but it became Wesley Broadway Methodist Church, which it is now.
Yeah. Okay. So you were saying the structure, your associate and then group and individual, how was it organised?
Mainly it was delegates who were representatives of either local organisations like the Women's Centre or national organisations like PPTA, and they sent delegates to the National Council of Women to bring their concerns and their views on issues to the branch, and then possibly to national. And then there were people like Barbara and me who were interested in women's issues, but for various reasons didn't represent organisations. And we became associates and had a regular meeting, and three of the associates represented our views at branch meetings. And then it changed to individual members, and individual members could attend meetings and represent their own views.
Right, so there could be, you could be individual or you could represent a group?
That's right.
Okay, so is it or was it essentially a lobby group?
That's a very interesting question, and we ran into a problem with that. We did have a court case about that very issue.
Nationally,
yes, because the Charities Commission, as it was then, decided that National Council of Women was an advocacy group because we would be putting in submissions on bills to Parliament, to select committees to hear the views of women, and on discussion documents and working with government agencies to put forward the views of women. They thought that was advocacy. We said we were advocating on behalf of half the population, so it was hardly specific advocacy. And they took us off the Register of Charities. National Council of Women New Zealand came off the Register of Charities because they decided we were an advocacy group, and that was not one of the heads of charity. The four heads of charity that they use at the moment date back to Elizabeth I, but they are under review, and there is some legislation, I think, coming through the process, something I need to check up on. So the implication of that was that we lost our tax-free status, which immediately did bad things to our financial situation. But we were able to find a very good lawyer who was interested in charities law and took the case to the High Court and won that advocacy on behalf of all women was not a bad thing to do. We were also involved in education, so there was a lot of education purposes that went on as well. So that was sort of a scene setter for lots of other charities, because a lot of our members that were organisations were likely to find themselves in the same position. So it was a very difficult time while we sorted out that particular question.
Yeah, because there was age concern and grey power made the split for the same reason, didn't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
There was a whole lot of implications that fell out of that.
Okay. So you weren't just doing the lobbying. There was the other charity-type activity?
That's right.
Which was what? What sort of thing?
One of the heads of charity is promoting religious expression, education, and NCW did a lot of that in that when the discussion around different bills and discussion documents from places came out, there was a lot of education that went on at branch level in order for members to understand what was going on.
So education is part of the lobby process, rather.
You've got to find out what's going on. That's an education process.
But there are other things. In 1946, the branch raised £300 out of the £100,000 needed to establish a chair of obstetrics at Otago University. And in 1951, a new building was purpose-built for the aged, because before that they'd been in the hospital and many of them were not functioning, so they really didn't need a place in the hospital. And three of our members were on the committee that founded that, and that's now the Marae. That building is now the Marae on Maxwell's Line. But that was the old people's home in Awapuni.
Okay, so you're going back sometime now. Of the three of you, you were the earliest to join in 78.
Of the three of us, yes.
Yeah, but the organisation has obviously been around for much longer.
1934.
The organisation, National Council of Women New Zealand, started in 1896.
Yeah, okay.
And it was initiated by that same group of women that drove the 1893 suffrage petition.
Okay.
So the first president was Kate Sheppard.
Mm-hmm.
So they had their first conference in 1897, and in 1897 they passed a remit that said that in all cases where women and men are engaged in the same work, either in the employment of government or of private individuals, equal wage should be paid for equal work. Passed in 1897, reiterated in 1900, 1901 and 1902. And as I was saying to Helen and Audrey a short time ago, one of the great things about being an organisation that's been around for this long is that you can point to your history in this particular issue, and we've been here for a long time. We are still plugging it. We just hand the baton to the next generation and they take it over.
Okay, so now that's in a one. You've got the national body. There are regional branches, are there? And what sort of membership? Is it large numbers? Are they relatively old, relatively young? You've got young women moving into this, or have they joined other organisations since then?
There are young women that belong to the organisation, but they tend to be individual members and they don't join up to branches the same. I know from the work that I do on the climate change and environment section, called a hub, which always is wary.
Within the National Council of Women?
Within the National Council of Women. They used to be called standing committees, now they're called hubs, which is the slowest moving part of the wheel, but never mind. And they tend to be active in those because it's more specific to what their interests are. Mm-hmm. So we have a number of young women on the different hubs that contribute in that way.
Mm.
The International Council of Women was formed. We were not one of the first organisations. National Council of New Zealand was not one of the first organisations to join up. to the International Council of Women. So that was started several years before NCWNZ started, which was always interesting to me. So we have this international connection. There are lots of NCWs. So there's NCW South Africa, there's NCW Canada, there's NCW Australia, there's NCW Great Britain, NCW Thailand, and etc., etc. Unless they're French speaking, in which case they're Conseil International de Femmes.
Yeah.
And the headquarters of ICW is based in Paris. Mm-hmm. ICW has permanent representation at the United Nations. Mm-hmm. So it's only a three-step process to the UN.
Yeah. So have some of you been involved in overseas gatherings on this?
Yes, yeah. I have. I've been to three and mm-hmm. also represented NCW as part of a government delegation to the Commission on the Status of Women in New York.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, and you said there's hubs, so what sort of areas are you looking at?
Audrey, which hubs are you involved with? Education?
No, health and welfare and the climate change. So they were the two that I have chosen to be part of.
Mm-hmm. And that involves doing what?
Well, it is fairly new. These are new hubs that we've just set up. But it involves, this is started by somebody in national office. And we're doing Zoom meetings to look at particular issues that are relevant to the hub that we have chosen to be part of. And there's one, for example, has just the one about the environment and climate change had a meeting recently, a Zoom meeting, and they have now put in a submission to the Minister for the Environment.
Okay.
That's so on the emissions reduction plan.
That's right.
Okay, so so what do you have a research body, or you formulate a policy that you promote, or you lobby your members for ideas?
All of those.
The
research body that we have is our membership, so we've got overlap between that. But as Audrey says, with the hubs, their specific members have volunteered to work on these particular problems, these particular bills, or in that case, the emissions reduction plan was a discussion document. But before that, we'd worked on the Zero Carbon Act as it is now, and that was done through the Climate Change and Environment Committee. And we do the research and we pull our ideas and we write it jointly and we put it in on behalf of National Council of Women.
Okay, so you'd have among your members, you'd have specialists in those areas, anyway,
yes.
There's a very wide range of people who have got very extremely good qualifications in particular areas.
So why should they operate through the National Council of Women rather than through either their professional bodies or some other group?
Numbers. When we write a submission on behalf of NCW, it always starts out with an introductory paragraph that explains what NCW is. It's an umbrella group of lots of organisations for women, and with a total, so our submission is representing a total number of whatever it is and how many branches have contributed. So it's setting up this is coming from a lot of women. If, as sometimes happens, the opinions vary, then we say so in the submission. Many of our members thought, others of our members thought, even if they're different, we represent all those viewpoints.
So it's actually the before a submission goes in, it goes out to all the regional members.
That's the ideal. We have just turned one down this week because it had a time frame, a turnaround frame of 1 week. It's just impossible to do it and consult people properly in that time frame.
And when Bob says that it comes from the opinion of the members in turn may or may not have taken this back to the people who they represent. Like if you're the Anglican representative, you may go back to the Anglican women's group. So it's actually a broader area than just members.
Yes,
it represents a lot of people.
One of the most significant, I think, where the balance was mentioned was in the 1970s with the Abortion Law Reform Act. And Dame Grace Hollander, who was the then national president, had often said to me that it was absolutely, you know, even, people for it, people against it. So when the submission went in, that's what was said. About half of our members are in favour of this and the other half are not, and these are the reasons why. So that when the MPs discuss something, they can look at the reasons and see what the reasons are and why people have those views. And it gives them, I think, a clearer picture than it does just going to their electorate meetings.
Yeah, I was going to say, it must be quite complex if you're trying to represent such a diverse group of women, and then there's, as you said, there's different religious bodies, there's different political persuasions, and I mean, even now it's the Council of Women, gender politics is dominant now. So do you, how would you describe the, is there a position, or you're just trying to be a voice for the diverse views coming through from different areas?
I think there often is a position.
But we also, we're trying to do both, in fact, and one of the reasons for this particular volume of the resolutions is that they all get...
Sorry, could you explain a volume of the resolutions?
This one is called 115 Years of Resolutions. So these are all the resolutions that have been passed by the National Conference since 1896 to 2010. There's an, another bit that comes on the end, which I don't have a copy of. So every one of those policies has been debated at National Conference, and there's been an agreement that this is our policy.
When you say agreement, is that consensus or majority?
Majority. Sometimes it's a majority. Sometimes it's consensus because everybody agrees, but they don't always agree.
Do you get breakaway groups then who say we don't like the direction that the council's got?
I don't think so.
Not often, but it has happened, and the abortion law reform is one where it is likely to happen.
But I think because of the balance and the fact that the submissions are sent back to the members so they can see what's been said, I think the fact that it was so balanced made people realise that National Council of Women was not taking a specific stand, either pro or anti, but was just representing the members. And I think that's the most important thing.
And that's the difference between advocacy and lobbying. That we were not... National Council of Women has never represented just one point of view unless all the members agreed with it.
Okay. So if you, when you've mentioned to people, and you were all in fairly significant roles in the organisation, if you said to people that you're doing that, what was the reaction?
Many of them are supportive. And National Council of Women has been able to make significant change in all sorts of areas. And I think that track record gives people confidence that what National Council of Women is saying is representative of women in general, and that gives credibility.
Now, given that you, I mean, you mentioned the abortion is one of the complex issues, would it be seen as a feminist organisation?
I would think so. It's advocating for women.
But in terms of feminist ideas and ideas of the patriarchy or whatever, and the, there are given that you have different views on some of these issues.
Yeah, but there are other ways in which we're not, because I will say something about the fact that we did a lot of work in the term when I was president. And we've all had turns of being
president of the local group.
I have not been president of the local branch. I've avoided that one.
She's been president of the national
one. Yeah. Yep.
Yes. and vice president of the National Bank.
Yes, I was vice president.
So, I don't know if this is the right time to say this, but I want to say something about our work, about getting people to vote.
Yes.
And getting people to stand. And during my term of office, I did a lot of work on encouraging women to stand for local council and other local bodies. There was a point at which we only had one woman of all the people on the city council. Only one was a woman. So, and on the other hand, in 2017, I think it was, one of the elections, we had done a lot of work on suggesting to women that we needed more women to stand, and we finished up that a total of 17 women stood for election, and that would include the DHB, or
the health district health board,
as well as and the Horizons, as well as our Palmerston North City Council. And what we did was we held some meetings. Some of the meetings we held, we had someone from the media. Actually, Richard May was the person then at the on the Manawatu Standards, and he talked about the importance of having a good relationship with the media and how to get them on board with what you're advocating. Yeah. And then we had people who had been on the City Council. I remember Jill White talking at one of our meetings and talking about the importance of having a team and how to choose a team to back you. And so we had a lot of... and the thing that I always said when I was being interviewed about it, which happened every now and then, was... We do not say vote because somebody's a woman. We say vote because somebody is a woman who is capable of doing the job. And we have always said, we're not feminist in the sense of saying she's a woman, so she's the person that we want. And we now, of course, have a 50% women, 50% men, fairly well, on the city council.
Yeah.
And... there are some city councillors to this day who say to me sometimes that it was because of the work that National Council of Women did that they put their name forward.
Okay. So you were they members of you? Well, I don't know, because
you don't have to
be a member of the you could be an associate or you could just be involved in one of
they
the groups or someone in the community.
Yeah, but they weren't involved with National Council of Women at all. These were just public meetings that we held.
Yeah, so you just saw people and some said, oh, I might be interested, and you said, okay,
we had public meetings and we advertised our meetings. And women came to the meetings, and they weren't always women that any of us knew. And they came to the meetings to hear what this was about.
Yeah.
And some of them realised that they could do this, and they could be involved, and that we needed people to be involved to step forward.
Yeah.
And Rachel Keedwell would be another person who was involved with that.
So you gave them support through the election process, or...?
Not really.
We really set them up. We gave them the
tools. I think that's what we could say.
That's right.
And then left them to it.
And we gave them confidence that they could do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we told them some of the things they needed to do, like the team and the media and so on.
Yeah.
And
I don't think any of us, unless they were personal friends already, were involved in the election campaigns.
No.
Because that wasn't our role. The only other thing we did was we did organise those Meet the Candidates meetings.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And the first one that I found history of is 1962, when Julia Wallace, her name was put forward by National Council of Women Manawatu to the Ratepayers Association to nominate. And Julia was the first woman on the Palmerston North City Council.
We're now nearly at time, a couple of minutes. But you mentioned Julia Wallace. There's a retirement village called Julia Wallace, so
that's
obviously
right.
She's significant. So could you just very briefly say, why is she important?
Yeah. we haven't got time.
No.
Julia
was the principal of Palmerston North Girls High School from 1948 to 1969. She was very active in the YWCA. She was very active, I think, in the ratepayers. She was president of National Council of Women Manawatu. She was national president of the Post-Primary Teachers Association. I don't know.
And then she went on the council as well.
She was the first woman on the Palmerston North City Council. And okay. You'll see her name on various plaques about buildings that were built at certain times.
You have Julia Wallace Park.
That's what Wallace Park, across the road from Ontiawiawi Fitzherbert Avenue corner. That's named after her. It's really difficult to explain what she was. A force of nature, and she was amazing.
Was she a Kiwi from Palmerston North? Or?
No, she wasn't. She came, I think, from the States.
I don't know. She came
from overseas, she was here for many, many years. And she was very much a person who was respected and feared and very much liked by a lot of us.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you're a fan of NPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the kiwifruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show.